not the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Do they have enough? Isn't that what you need? You need enough, right? Because three strong, not just like three guys. You got like three All-Americans pretty much running rounds. Do you need depth at secondary? Do you think Michigan has that, or is that something that maybe is exposed to late in the game?
You know, the experience of Michigan, I think, really shows up in this game. These guys have been playing together for a really long time. I do think they have that talent. It's a matter of if they can sustain throughout the game. And the amount of communication required, every shift, every motion, every stack is going to make it hard for those guys to go out there and play.
That was Dan Lanning back in January. Remember when he was an analyst pregame with McAfee and others for Michigan, Washington, and now he is coaching against Michigan, game planning for Michigan, getting ready for a Michigan team that looks a lot different in most regards than the one that took the field and won the national title all the way back 10 months ago. But still an interesting test. Let's talk about with Spencer McLaughlin. He's our contributor at 750thegame.com and also Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football podcast host. And en route or boots on the ground in Texas, where are you today, Spencer?
Abilene, Texas, guys. Abilene, Texas. Southern Utah's got a big one in the UAC tomorrow against the top 20 opponent in Abilene Christian. UAC, third best FCS conference in the country behind Missouri Valley and the Big Sky. And I think it might be better than one of those leagues this year. They've got three teams in the top 25 and one in the top 10. They're a tough league, so it's a great time to be covering college football in more than one capacity.
That's so cool. That is so cool. Now Abilene, I think I remember. Is it a railroad town? Is a lot of trains in the area? What's your early sense of it?
180,000 people, and you know I'm calling you from a complex of restaurants and bars and dessert places that I tell you, if I were a student, I'd come to every week and get fat as can be, because yep. there's some good spots around here. But you know, it's very flat. It's very flat. Seems like a really nice place. People are nice, at least the ones I've interacted with so far. And you know, we're just hoping that the rain holds off tomorrow so that we can play a clean football game. But you know, Southern Utah and Abilene Christian, it's going to be a fun one to call.
Thunderbirds and Abilene Christian, that's pretty cool. All right, Ducks Michigan's going to be a lot of fun as well. You've been covering it on your podcast, especially on Locked On Ducks. It's been a lot of fun to listen to. You've been writing about it on 750thegame.com as well. You said that the Illinois game plan that Oregon had, they should replicate it this week. Why do you say that?
Well, I think when you look at what Michigan has personnel-wise, they cannot get into a horse race. They cannot get into a shootout. They're not built that way. And, you know, if Oregon comes out and tries to sleepwalk through the game, Michigan could beat them. I mean, ask USC if you can simply go in and, you know, just throw the ball around with a bunch of great skill position players and win. Like, no, you have to bring it on the lines of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, but particularly I think it's a test for Oregon's offensive line. But if Oregon jumps out to an early lead in this game, Judah, Michigan cannot come back and win. The fact that they were at Washington and trailed 14-0 but came back to have a lead, it is something that they were able to do on one particular game against the Huskies, and I don't think you can do that against this Oregon team. And, you know, I actually heard not that long ago that Will Johnson, the top 10 draft pick for Michigan defensively at corner, he's going to be out. And this is a Michigan pass defense that is around 90th in the country defending the pass this season. So you take an NFL guy out of there who would have been a key matchup against either Tez Johnson or Evan Stewart on a given play. I just don't think that Michigan's passing attack has shown any signs of life to where, you know, they can consistently sustain drives. Like if Michigan's going to win the football game, they have to keep Oregon at 24 points or fewer. And if Oregon gets out to a big lead, then you're starting to throw the ball with Davis Warren, and he is just not going to be good enough against this Oregon pass defense.
Yeah, that is huge news. If Will Johnson, yeah, you're right, expecting to miss the game. So we were talking about that earlier in the show, Spencer. Like I was thinking that Will might play, but if he's out, that's obviously that swings things. Go ahead, Steven. What do you got?
Are we at a point now, Spencer, where, you know, going into the season, there was still the question of, can Dan Lanning, can we trust him? Can we win the big game? Because Tosh Lapoy, as a defensive coordinator, we know he's a great recruiter, but as a defensive coordinator, X and O's wise, can we trust that guy? Are we at a point now in the season and in their careers where we can say, yeah, Dan Lanning and Tosh Lapoy, we can trust these guys going into a big game?
I have no reason to suspect otherwise, just given what we've seen from those guys over the first few years, not just their performance this year, but you also, when you're evaluating coaches, look at what, you know, happened the year prior compared to what's happening now. And Oregon's defense has gotten better every year with these two guys as the top two defensive masterminds, you know, whether that's talent acquisition, coaching, you know, or everything in between. I think that they have really proven that they deserve the trust of Oregon fans to go out and have their team ready to play. And, you know, Oregon's worst performance this year, week one against Idaho, that wasn't a problem with the defense. They pitched a shutout in the first half, and then the offense turned the ball over at their own 35-yard line because they couldn't pick up a yard and had two guys crashing into each other as they were working out early season kinks. So I think that the defense from the jump this year has been really good, and it continues to look better and better. First shutout in 12 years against Purdue, and if not for a Derek Harmon penalty, I don't think they allow a touchdown against Illinois. And Illinois's got a better quarterback-receiver combo. They're probably a little bit stronger in the run game. Michigan is, anyway, than Illinois, but I don't think Michigan scores a touchdown tomorrow.
Yeah, your prediction has 31-6 for the Ducks. How about for Dylan Gabriel, you know, Heisman front runner by a little bit over Cam Ward, over Travis Hunter, etc. To me, though, Spencer, there's still a couple.
You're not going to just leave Ashton Gentry out of the Heisman conversation, are you now, Judah? That guy is out of this world.
It's so funny. Like, so they're up. They just started with San Diego State. And I was like, is Gentry playing? Because I know he's banged up a little bit. And he's already two carries for 16 yards. And both of them were 8-yard carries. It's like, of course, every time this guy touches the ball, it's 8+.
Yeah, by the way, two carries for 16 yards, 8 yards a touch, that's going to bring down his season average.
Yeah, that's how good he's been. And it colors the game against Oregon a little differently, that's for sure. That also with the Ducks, everybody said, oh, yeah, they score 30-plus points since the Idaho game. And I'm like, kind of, but you had two return touchdowns to do it in the Boise game. So, yeah,
well,
I get it.
That's necessarily a negative. When is having explosive playmakers that can make guys miss in the open field a bad thing? Like, no, Whittington and Tez Johnson play offense, too.
It's
they
true.
Just happen to be involved in the special team sequence there. Like, was the offense playing at peak efficiency? Not necessarily, but were they bad? No, I didn't think so.
So, Gabriel, every now and then, a questionable decision out of the guy, and it's different than Bo. Bo was, you know, much more consistent and safe, I think, in his decision making. Dylan, a little less so. Is there any of that volatility that's on your mind going into the game tomorrow?
I think it's on the mind of Oregon fans in every game, but I think the key for Dylan Gabriel is to not let those sorts of plays really start to stack up, because he makes a bad decision against Illinois, and I think the only other consistent area of turnover-worthy plays have been on screen passes, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So you go look at a couple of the swing passes against Ohio State, almost got batted down on balls where JT Tuimoloau in his career's made that a pick six, or there was almost an interception on the screen pass to Tez Johnson last week against Illinois. Like, those have been the most consistently dangerous plays for Dylan Gabriel. Like, a bad decision every now and then. I'm not worried about it. Nobody plays perfect football for four quarters every single week, 12 games a year in the regular season. But I think that the important thing is he's cleaned up the red zone turnovers. You know, three interceptions in the red zone in 2 weeks against UCLA and then against Michigan State. Clean that up from Ohio State on, and I think you're seeing this offense pretty close to its full potential with the way he's been playing. So it's on my mind as I watch Oregon play, but I'm not nervous watching Dylan Gabriel throw the football, wondering when he's going to throw his next interception.
Are you worried at all about the second half production out of the offense, or are we just seeing a sense of Oregon getting up big in the first half and then taking their foot off the gas a little bit?
The answer to your question directly is no. The quote, Oregon's head coach, Dan Lanning, who cares? It's just you get up 35-3, I don't care what football team you are, it is hard to keep the same level of intensity and drive when you know. I don't think it's just that Oregon's getting up big and they're coasting. I think they're getting up big and they know that the other team cannot come back. And when you have such a great defense on the other side, it's pretty easy to get into that mindset. And, you know, I've talked about this on my show before, and I've heard people discuss it, and I understand why, because Oregon's had some third quarter lulls, but in the games where they've had to play for a full four quarters, they have. Like, they had to against Idaho and Boise State, as wild as that sounds, and they had to against Ohio State. And you know what I noticed? They won those football games, because when you keep guys dialed in with a close game, Oregon's going to be able to pass that test. Like, I don't think that that's a big issue. Like, they get up big. They're running the football a lot. I think it was the UCLA game, maybe. Dylan Gabriel threw it 31 times, I think, in the first half, and 10 times in the second half. I think the coaching staff knows, okay, let's just let the defense carry us home. Whereas, you know, back in the Chip Kelly days, Oregon fans got used to, hey, they're going to score 50 or 60 or 70 points because they can. And I think this team could if they wanted to, but do they need to? Absolutely not. They're ranked number one in the country, so they don't need to, you know, raise awareness about how good they are as a football team. I think they're just leaning on their defense more to close out those big leads than their offense.
We're talking to Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football, contributes to 750thegame.com. You mentioned that number one ranking. The first playoff rankings come out Tuesday next week. Oregon, with a win over Michigan, in all likelihood will remain that number one team in the CFP. You know, big picture, the goal at the end of this for every Duck fan and for the Ducks themselves is to win it all, to win a national championship at the University of Oregon. They are talented enough to do that, Spencer, without question, in my mind. But how realistic or how challenging do you think it would be to go wire to wire as a number one ranked CFP team next Tuesday and to keep winning week in, week out, winning the conference title game in Indianapolis, depending on who you play, and then keep winning your college football playoff games all the way to the title? How difficult a task, how realistic a task is that for Oregon to be able to do that?
I think it's plenty realistic. I think the implications of it are a lot more significant outside the program than inside of it. You know, I'm sure if you asked that question to Lanning, he'd go back to his who cares response. He gave that to my guy Jared Mack at 24/7 when he asked him about getting back to the number one ranking, and I think he's pretty genuine in that belief of like this. I didn't come here to just get Oregon to a number one spot. I came here to win a national championship, or as he said, be the winningest coach in Oregon history. But that first goal is what I think every Oregon fan, you know, really wants to see, and this team can absolutely do that. I think it would be a pretty big statement to the Big Ten to just kind of let all the other fans know, and, you know, other teams as well, but just kind of let them know, like, hey, by the way, this team that's been out west for a long time, that's in your conference now, they're not messing around. They're coming here to play big boy, Big Ten football right here, right now. They're not going to have a 2 to 3 year adjustment period, like it looks like USC might need to undergo. But I think that for Oregon, they just have to beat Michigan, go forward, and, you know, I know everyone will be keeping their eyes on the election on Tuesday, but I'm going to be locked into those playoff rankings, guys, because I tell you what, the ramifications are going to be far greater reaching in this great country with how the committee views a 12-team format. How do they handle a team with one loss and two losses in this conference and strength of schedule? That's what we really need to focus on Tuesday.
The only votes that matter in the CFP, right?
That's absolutely right.
If the Ducks are to lose any game this season besides the Big Ten championship game, Spencer, is it the Michigan game, or is it the Wisconsin game, or is it even the Washington game? Is there one that stands out?
I think it's the Wisconsin game, just because, you know, Michigan could be a great team in 1924, but it's 2024, so we have this thing called the forward pass,
since
that has been invented, it's become a necessary component to win football games unless you're a service academy. But I just look at Michigan and say, yeah, you're a quarterback and some receivers away. They can be fine, but they're not right now. Wisconsin has a higher chance of playing complementary football, and that environment, just like tomorrow's for Oregon, is going to be raucous. And again, if Oregon comes out and plays their worst game since Idaho, yeah, Michigan could catch them in a low-scoring affair. I don't anticipate that happening, especially without Will Johnson. I think the team is just really, really humming at a level that we haven't seen in a while for the Ducks. And I think Michigan is just trying to figure out too many things. And I don't think you can beat – like they beat USC passing for 32 yards. You're not going to be able to do that against Oregon. So I think that Wisconsin is the game right now. I wouldn't sleep on Washington. Like, Washington's a good team until they get beyond the 40-yard line, and then they turn into, I don't know, a bottom-tier FCS squad with the way that they run their offense. Like, it just – they march right down the field, and then they just full on – I watched a lot of Tom and Jerry as a kid. Jerry always used to lead Tom into a rake outside, and then he would step on that rake and would come up and whack him in the forehead. That's what Washington does every time they get on the other side of the 40 or 30-yard line. Like, they look so good. And Jed Fish is a really good play caller. He's got his blueprints all over that offense. And then once they get to the scoring area, boom, it all goes away. And I think it's just a matter of first-year struggles. But, I mean, if they figure that out by game 12, yeah, I think they could absolutely push Oregon, but I peg that Wisconsin game as the toughest one on Oregon's schedule that's left outside of a conference championship game.
I thought you were a Tom and Jerry guy. I'm glad that you were able to confirm that on the record. Hey, before you go, where do you come out on Penn State, Ohio State tomorrow? And who do you see, say Oregon wins out and they're the one seed, who do you see as that best path to the two seed to Indianapolis? And this is kind of assuming in Indiana, Penn State, and Oregon, they don't all go undefeated down the stretch.
Well, Oregon is rooting for Ohio State tomorrow, because if they beat Penn State, then Oregon does control its own destiny to the Big Ten title game. But if Penn State wins, that becomes incredibly complicated, because you might get down to an analytics metric that I'm not even entirely certain how it works when you're looking at tiebreakers. So if Ohio State beats Penn State, and I think they will, I think the Buckeyes will win that football game. I don't trust Penn State in big spots. They've got quarterback questions going into this Ohio State defensive line that is really, really good and played well against Nebraska last week, even though the offense didn't. I think Chip Kelly will figure that out. I think that if Ohio State wins, or I know that if Ohio State wins, then it doesn't matter what happens in Ohio State and Indiana, because then the winner is going to face a theoretically unbeaten Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. But Penn State being another unbeaten is where the chaos can ensue. So I wait until that game finishes, then look at chaos tiebreaker scenarios. But I think Ohio State will win, and it'll simplify a lot of things in the Big Ten.
He's at S. McLaughlin, CFB. He writes for us a couple times a week at 750thegame.com with his Duck Thoughts, and hosts Locked On Ducks and Locked On College Football podcast in Abilene, Texas, for Southern Utah and Abilene Christian. Man, what a season. What a time to be Spencer McLaughlin right now. Thanks for joining us, man.
What a time. Yeah, you don't hear me complaining about it. Life is good. Football is great. Thanks for having me, guys.
There he goes. We'll catch up with him again down the road. When we come back, we'll go around the rest of sports and get you what's on tap. We'll also get a little produced hype montage of Oregon, Illinois from a week ago on CBS and get you ready for Oregon, Michigan. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for Canzano today on the Bald-Faced Truth.